Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.
WSBT Radio Studios in downtown South Bend.
Let's go! Come on!
Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Wow, don't blink. A lot of major intestinal fortitude going on here.
On your home for Notre Dame football.
Knocked down by Wooden. The game is over. The Irish is upset. Florida State. Notre Dame is number one.
And Notre Dame basketball.
Number one ranked UCLA Bruins. Have been upset by the Irish of Notre Dame.
Good! Arike Ogunbowale wins the national championship for Notre Dame.
Plus, Fighting Irish hockey.
They score! Jake Evans scores! Notre Dame, 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The NFL and Major League Baseball.
Oh my gracious, how about that?
Sports Radio 960 WSBT, WSBTRadio.com, the free WSBT radio app.
Big time onions!
Now, here's your host, seven-time Associated Press Broadcasting Award winner, Darren Pritchett.
Well, a pleasant good evening, everyone. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat back on the air on 960 AM WSBT. We are streaming live at WSBTRadio.com on our free WSBT radio app. Also, we've got a video feed of the studio right now on the Twitch app. My name is Darren Pritchett. Hope you had a terrific weekend. A little chilly for the Blue Gold game, but I tell you what, we saw a lot of good stuff. Very entertaining contest at Notre Dame Stadium as the Fighting Irish wrapped up spring practice for 2024. Now, in 131 days, we'll have the Irish in College Station taking on the Texas A&M Aggies in the season opener. We've got 2 hours to talk Notre Dame football, in particular the Blue Gold game here on WSBT Radio. And pretty much every segment will have something to do with the Blue Gold game and Notre Dame football. I'll have some help along the way coming up at 5:30, my weekly conversation with Notre Dame football beat reporter for Blue and Gold Illustrated. You can read his work at blueandgold.com. Tyler Horka will rejoin the program to offer his thoughts on Saturday's scrimmage at Notre Dame Stadium. Also throughout the program, we'll talk about the quarterbacks, the look of the roster. What about the five storylines of the Blue Gold game? Which position stood out? We'll go through all those storylines, and we've got commentary from Marcus Freeman and winning coach of the Blue Gold game, Al Washington, talking about various aspects of what they saw on Saturday. All right, we have to get started with our opening topics for this Monday, April the 22nd of 2024. We begin with just some general thoughts. It is April 22nd. The Notre Dame football team for 2024 is not a finished product at this particular time. They'll be working out together in the summertime. We've got fall practice to get through. So there's a lot that can happen. Hopefully all good. Sometimes injuries happen. We know that in the offseason. But I'll tell you what. I was excited about watching this team on Saturday. From the standpoint, this just feels like a roster that is capable of achieving their goals in 2024. Now, I don't know specifically what the team's goals are. I think we can all guess. Win every game they play, make the college football playoff, and not just make it, do damage, ultimately trying to win that first national title since 1988. I truly believe, and I'm not trying to be in the moment too much or recency bias, but I sure feel like this is the best roster that Notre Dame has had in some time. Now, I've been around these parts for 25 years, and I've forgotten a lot of players that have come and gone from South Bend. But I think it is safe to say during the end of the Davey era into Tyrone Willingham, there were holes on those rosters. Charlie Weiss got to two BCS bowl games with a great quarterback, a really good offense, and a defense that just kind of accidentally got in the way sometimes. So it wasn't a complete football team. That Brady Quinn offense carried the load. Remember the Ohio State Fiesta Bowl game? I was at that game in the press box about 50 miles in the sky, where the Irish gave up 600 yards of total offense. During the Brian Kelly era, hey, they got to the championship game. They went to the playoffs twice. Those were extremely talented rosters. I think of those three so-called playoff teams, the championship team might have been the weakest of the three. I really feel like that this roster has a lot more balance to it. Now, with that being said, that doesn't mean that there are not holes to be filled or things to get better. I left the Blue Gold game very positive. If I had one area of the football team that I'm cringing thinking about, it's the offensive tackle spots. They're going to be fine in the interior of that offensive line. You don't replace Joelt. He's a top 10 pick in the NFL draft on Thursday. Blake Fisher's a top 100 player in the NFL draft. Those are two difficult guys to replace. And again, you're not going to replace Joelt with someone on the roster. Now, the pass rush, 7 sacks, but I don't take a whole lot away from that because the offensive line is split up amongst the blue and the gold. That's the one area of the game you have to walk away saying, okay, that was not the group together. The five best were not playing together. They were split up. So the sack total, let's just say, okay, good job by the pass rush, but let's see what Notre Dame's offensive line looks like when the five starters get together. And we assume Jagasaw, left tackle, Baker, right tackle. We know Craig at center. And then those three guards will battle for the two starting spots. Billy Shrouth, Rocco Spindler, Pat Coogan. Whoever ends up being the starting guards, I think we all feel good about. And the third member of that group, someone goes down, you've got a terrific replacement ready to go. Al Golden, year three of the defense, exceptional last year, giving up just 15 points per game. Number one pass efficiency defense, number five in total defense. With the parts coming back and what we believe are some really good replacements for departing players, I hope I am correct. I'm not expecting much of a fallback from the defense. 15.9 points per game is pretty good, but I think there's room to get better with this bunch. The talent and the schedule gives me hope that you can be a little bit better than 15 points per game. And if you are, you are going to be winning a lot of football games and probably hosting a playoff game in December. Quarterbacks, we'll talk about those guys in just a moment. Skill position, solid. To me, the roster looks really good. There is some amazing depth. I'm telling the linebacking core, there are some boys in that group. And you're probably going to have a handful of linebackers playing every game, depending on down and distance and what Al Golden wants to do. See Jaden Osbury, the kid who went to high school on the edge of LSU's campus, the sophomore, line up in the slot against Jaden Greathouse and run stride for stride with him and actually come up with a pass breakup on a pretty good throw, hello, that is a weapon. There's a guy you can have on the field at linebacker. Can handle the run, but also you need him outside. I can do that too. That was awfully impressive. I mean, on down the line, Saturday wasn't a Jack Kaiser day, and he's your most experienced player. He's going to be the Will linebacker. He was not out there, but everybody else pretty much was on display, and I was thoroughly impressed. Now, granted, I have to watch the football a lot, go back and watch the game, see a little bit more, like the linebacking core. Very exciting. Very, very exciting. This is the moment I think so many Irish fans on Twitter and message boards have been waiting for. Get these old linebackers out of the way. Let's see these young guys with all the great resumes coming out of high school. Hey, Bertrand and Leofau were really good players. In particular, Bertrand. Leofau's interesting. His draft stock is going to be fascinating. Somebody's going to take a chance on him sooner than you will expect because of his traits. But Bertrand did a great job for this football team. So now they've moved on, and now your young pups you've been waiting to see were on display Saturday, and I think you probably were smiling seeing what they were able to accomplish. Good stuff from that particular group. So, yeah, year three for Marcus Freeman as head coach of this football program, and a lot of really good things are falling into place.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously through experience, you're hopefully I'm a better head coach today than I was the first two times I was up here. But, you know, every year you look at what do you need talent-wise to really mold it together to make a run. And I believe this probably is – I would want to say one of the most talented rosters we've had since I've been here, right? And now it's our job is to build that talent and mold that talent and make sure we teach that talent to get to where we want to go. And but now we have a new offensive coordinator, a couple new coaches, and so we have to really continue to grow as coaches to develop that talent that we have. But I'm excited. I'm excited for this group. I'm excited for the build that we're creating right now, right? We're building towards that first game we have in a College Station. And so I love where we're at. We have to really make some strides from now until summer. And then when they get back for summer, those 6-8 weeks, we've got to make sure they're really efficient. What have we learned from the spring that me and Coach Lando have met? And what have we learned from the spring that we can really create in our summer condition? One of the things I went up to him today during a game, and I said, okay, this is why we should never do a drill on a line, because we had how many 3 or 4 defensive false starts or offsides because we're not checking with the ref to make sure we're aligned right. So I think those are things that me and Coach Lando are growing together. And okay, how can we train this area in the summer when you're training them in conditioning? So we're learning, but I really love where this group is progressing to.
I am too. Offensive tackle will be something we will talk about a lot during the offseason. It's awfully difficult to find an offensive tackle at this stage of the portal. Now, we might be surprised. I know a young man from Clemson, didn't play a whole lot as a freshman, went into the portal today. But it's probably going to be difficult to find help there. You just got to grow the guys you have currently on the roster. Now, with all the excitement that I talked about right there, I do have to pause because your likely starting quarterback was not involved in spring practice the last month due to the ankle surgery, the second ankle surgery for Riley Leonard. So sure, it's tough to get head over heels when your quarterback that you assume is going to start missed a month. Now, he was standing behind the offense going through the motions, the mental reps, and pretending to throw the football as he was looking over the play, just like the quarterback that was in the game was doing. That's a huge positive, but there's a lot of time in the summer where he's going to be working to build that chemistry with the wide receiving core. So going into August, let's hope he is fully healthy. The ankle is in the rearview mirror, and Riley Leonard can focus on winning the starting job and being a difference maker for Mike Denbrock's offense. So what did you take away from the quarterbacks? First off, I would say all three had good days. Not perfect, but all probably left the locker room feeling pretty good about their performance. Steve Angeli could not be hit in the game. The Sun Bowl almost MVP, 17 of 25 for 228 yards and a couple of touchdowns. Had the touchdown throw to Chris Mitchell to put the blue team back in front late in the fourth quarter, 28-21. That turned out to be the game winner. You know, Steve was solid in the game. I thought missed a couple of throws, threw a couple of changeups. But ended up with two touchdown passes. He was sacked three times again. You get near him, whistle blows. So that sack total, give or take. So Angeli, I don't think it was a day in which he showed me anything new. I believe it was the type of day that validates everything we think about him, knowing that he is a very, very capable quarterback. If he is your number two quarterback, you feel really good about your backup if something happens to Riley Leonard. We saw him against Oregon State. He was the guy and handled things very, very well. So for me, Steve Angeli was Steve Angeli. Nothing changed. Kenny Minchie, opportunity for him to run the gold team offense. Started off slow, picked it up as the game went on. Minchie ended up 12 of 19 for 123 yards. He had a touchdown and also was picked off one time. The interception was not a good read. He was under pressure, and he did the one thing that none of his coaches want him to do, and that is throw the football up for grabs. And that's exactly what happened. It was picked off by Talich, and Minchie, one of three turnovers by the gold team offense during Saturday's game. Now, again, Minchie got better as the game went on. I really liked what he did in the second half. And I find it very interesting that Minchie ran the football six times for 40 yards, including, from my perception, a plan run off the left side of the offensive line, scoring from 5 yards out. So he had a touchdown on one of his runs. The other five runs by Minchie in this game all went for first downs. And these were not fluky first downs because he did not have a red jersey on. He had to get out of the pocket at times and take off running for positive yardage. So in his six carries, Minchie had five first downs and a touchdown. Highly productive. So you really liked his versatility in this game. Minchie's the one guy we probably didn't have a big perception of going into the game. I thought he was very, very good, but I thought the freshman quarterback was a tad bit better, and that's CJ Carr. CJ's more fresh in our mind because we watched his high school film. We watched his 7-on-7. All these things are fresh in our mind. We read the clippings of how this could be the next great quarterback at Notre Dame. And I think there's a really good chance that CJ Carr is going to be your starting quarterback in 2025. The throws that he made in that game were sparkling. Two throws stand out to me. The first one, throwing the ball down the seam to Micah Gilbert, right between a safety and, if I remember right, a corner. But he threw that ball on a line, on the money. Gilbert did not have to break stride for the touchdown. Big time throw. The other throw that really caught my attention was on a day in which the wind was swirling at Notre Dame Stadium. I'm going to guess the throw I'm describing, the ball was probably going to be thrown into a side wind. So the ball was snapped on the left hash, closest to the Notre Dame home sideline. He dropped back to throw and running an out pattern to the opposite sideline was Gilbert. And in that wind, CJ Carr dropped the ball right in the bucket. That is a long distance throw from the left hash to the right sideline with the wind probably in his face or a bit of a side wind to make the throw more difficult. A, Gilbert never had to slow down, made the catch, tapped his toes, inbound. And the ball was lobbed right over the shoulder of Gilbert perfectly. Couldn't have placed it any better. For that one play, you couldn't find an NFL quarterback that would have thrown it any better. Those are just two throws. I get it. But I thought he made quick decisions, got the ball out of his hand. The one time he was in a pile of players and like Eli Manning in the Super Bowl before the helmet catch, he spun out of there with someone grabbing the jersey above his shoulder pad, got out of there and fired the football, if I remember right. I don't think he ran on that one. I thought he was poised, he was in control of the offense, and he made at least two eye-popping throws, both to the freshman, Micah Gilbert, who was targeted 9 times in the game, 5 catches, 79 yards, 2 touchdowns. So, CJ was really, really good, was thoroughly impressed. I loved what all 3 quarterbacks did, though. But CJ, a couple of those throws made him, in my eyes, look a little different than everybody else. But it's good to have all the quarterbacks playing well. That was very, very good to see. And I'm excited to see how this all plays out in the fall. What's the depth chart going to look like? Are all 4 quarterbacks going to stay on the roster? If all 4 are on the roster, I will make this claim right now, not knowing anything about any other team in the country, but if Minshew is still on the roster, CJ Carr is probably going to be, without a doubt, the best number 4 quarterback in the country, and it's probably not even close. This kid would be starting, I think, in a lot of places. Power 5, if you need to. Not overtaking a starter coming back, but if there's a vacancy, you could see this kid coming in, competing, and giving it his best shot and probably doing a pretty good job. But for now, he's well down the depth chart, and you have to think he's a leading candidate to be the 25 quarterback. And once he gets that job, is he ever going to give it back before he goes either out the door to the graduation or out early to the NFL draft? We shall see. Don't want to put the cart out in front of the horses, but that was pretty good. That was fun to watch. And CJ will come up in our Twitter question of the day in just a little bit. We'll take a timeout. Let's bring another voice into the conversation. What did Blue and Gold Illustrated's Tyler Horka take away from the Blue Gold game? We'll ask him about the quarterbacks right off the bat. We'll keep the conversation alive. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on your home of the Fighting Irish, including the season opener, August 31st at Texas A&M. You will hear it on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. All right, Abby, thank you very much. Sports Beat continues, 5:34 on this Monday. Blue Gold game on Saturday. Notre Dame reported the attendance at 37,000 on a day in which the temperatures snuck up into the mid-40s with a stiff wind. So credit to all the fans that came out to the ball game at Notre Dame Stadium. We had fun calling it here on WSBT Radio. You heard my opening thoughts of the Blue Gold game. Now let's bring in the voice of Tyler Horka, the Notre Dame football beat reporter at Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. Of course, you can read all his work daily at blueandgold.com, and he joins me every Monday to talk Notre Dame football. And this is a very important Monday because it is the Monday after the Blue Gold game, arguably the biggest day on the offseason calendar. All right, Tyler, let's begin with the quarterback position. Was there a loser on Saturday, or did all the quarterbacks win?
How'd I know that we were going to start here, Darren? How did I know? Was there a loser? I think everybody won, and that's including Riley Leonard, because in these things, we've seen it. I mean, Tyler Buchner last year, Drew Pine 2 years ago, two guys that had chances to start in the last couple of seasons at Notre Dame just kind of destroy their stock in those games. I mean, Tyler Buchner was in the portal just a few days after he went, I believe it was 8 of 18 for less than 50 yards and an interception last year. Drew Pine, remember when he played for both teams a couple of seasons ago? That was the offseason where it was him and Tyler Buchner kind of battling it out to be the starter. And as soon as he just kind of really had a no-show performance in that blue gold game, he was pretty much out of the race at that point. I think everybody knew that Tyler Buchner was going to be the starter going into Ohio State that season. So all of that to say, somehow this time, and I wrote before the game in my final thoughts column, that all eyes were going to be on the quarterback, and usually something crazy happens, and we're going to be talking about, you know, somebody didn't play well or somebody did this. This time, we're talking about how everyone played well, and we don't have to talk about how Riley Leonard didn't play well because he didn't play. All three guys that did play, I thought, played fantastically. Yeah, there was a couple of mistakes here and there. C.J. Carr probably should have thrown an interception. Kenny Minchie did throw an interception. Steve Angeli missed a couple open passes. But by and large, when you look at the statistics that all these guys put forth and just kind of the way that they controlled the game, got the offense up and down the field, scored points. I mean, Darren, a couple of years ago, this was a 13-10 game in the blue gold game. Last year, one of the teams didn't even score. It was 24-0. But this time you had every single quarterback go in and orchestrate at least one touchdown drive. We saw C.J. Carr do it for both teams. That was really impressive. But I think everybody in that quarterback room was a winner, and that kind of goes along with the theme of the way that we've been presenting this the entire offseason. This is one of Notre Dame's most impressive, talented quarterback rooms, top to bottom, in a very long time, and they kind of showed it on Saturday.
Tyler, you're right. Kenny Minchie threw a ball up for grabs. It got intercepted. C.J. Carr threw a ball up for grabs. He was under pressure. It did not get intercepted. So both players put the ball up for grabs in the game. But otherwise, I thought Minchie got better as the game went on. And I tell you what, Tyler, I thought C.J. Carr was in complete control of the offense. And the touchdown throw to Gilbert and the across-the-field out pattern to Gilbert, those two throws really caught my attention. Was C.J. Carr the C.J. Carr you expected to see, or was he a tad bit better? How do you analyze him?
I would say he was a tad bit better. And okay. I was really worried for him from the moment that Marcus Freeman on Thursday during that draft said, C.J. Carr is going to play for both teams. I've already said this 2 minutes ago in the conversation, that when Drew Pine had to do that, it was just so tough. But Drew Pine was playing both ways, and he didn't really have a stop. I think that was his hindrance. C.J. Carr played for both teams in this one, but he kind of got a break because for a while there, Kenny Minchie was solely playing for the gold team, and Steve Angeli was mostly playing for the blue team. I think C.J. Carr, when he's standing on the sideline in those situations, he's basically doing the Riley Leonard like we saw behind the plane. He's just internalizing. He's a really smart kid. And then he goes in there and just kind of plays his game. Yeah, he's watching these reps from Angeli and Minchie, but he goes in there and you can tell that he's his own dude. And like you said, he makes some of these throws that are distinctly C.J. Carr. Like, Steve Angeli wasn't making these throws. Kenny Minchie, the gunslinger that he's been termed and dubbed in spring practice, he wasn't even making those throws. So it was the throws that you mentioned. I think there was even one, a completion to Jack Larson that was really impressive. And then also an incompletion where it was kind of like the C.J. Stroud throw, and look what C.J. Stroud has done in the NFL. But you remember that throw that he made in Columbus a couple of years ago, Darren, where C.J. Stroud just kind of pranced along and got to the sideline, and then in the back of your mind, you're thinking, is this guy ever going to throw it? And when he does, is there any chance that it's going to be on target? He completed that ball. C.J. Carr kind of did the same thing on Saturday, and it ended up being an incomplete pass, but it was really more of a drop by the tight end than anything. But he put that ball right on the money. It's just plays like that, Darren, where I'm sitting there going, okay, he's got a little bit of an it factor to his game.
We're talking Notre Dame football, in particular the Blue Gold game, with Tyler Horka from Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. Two receivers that I really thought helped themselves: Micah Gilbert trying to push his way up the depth chart, and Deion Colsey, a veteran guy, trying not to get lapped by the competition. I felt like both of those guys helped themselves. How would you evaluate those two?
Yeah, I think Notre Dame's going to have a good problem on its hand, and this isn't unique to the boundary position. Just imagine when Jordan Faison gets back and he's going to be battling with Jaden Greathouse. But at that boundary spot, I mean, when you have Jaden Thomas healthy, he's primarily played boundary the last couple of seasons. Deion Colsey pretty much exclusively plays the boundary. And Micah Gilbert has been playing a lot of boundary this spring as well. You mentioned it. I mean, they were on separate teams. Deion Colsey doing really good things for the blue team, Gilbert doing really good things for the gold team. At some point, you know, you're all going to be on the same team, and you're going to have to try to funnel those reps. But like I said, that's a good problem to have, because Colsey really set the tone in that game. I thought he was physical, even on the C.J. Carr pass that we mentioned. I mean, he made a heck of a play to bat that thing out of Christian Gray's hands, and that's not easy to do. When Christian Gray gets his hands on the ball, he easily comes down with it. Very good cornerback. So Colsey looked healthy. I think that was a big thing. And when he's healthy, he's more aggressive. He can be a little bit more himself. And then Micah Gilbert, that's the Micah Gilbert that we've seen all spring. I know I've pumped him up quite a bit on this show and at blueandgold.com for sure. So for his size, I mean, he's only 6'2", but he's every bit of about 215 pounds, I would say. That's a really good size for a boundary wide receiver if you want to mix in speed and physicality. But then he's also just a really good route runner. And you're asking, okay, how did he get so wide open on both of those passes, both of those touchdowns that he caught? Just runs a really good route. And then we'll bring it back to how we started this conversation. Notre Dame's got a couple really good quarterbacks to put the ball on him. I think it was Minshew that threw the first one, and then C.J. Carr with a really nice touchdown over the top of the corner and the crashing safety on the second one. But, yeah, to your point, two really good wide receivers that, when healthy, are going to be battling each other for reps this fall.
Running back room, Price and Young were not on display in this particular game. You had the offensive line broken up, so I think you have to take some things that happened with the offensive line with a grain of salt. But was there anybody amongst the running backs that really caught your eye showing what they offered to the fan base on Saturday?
Yeah, I'll just get the obvious out of the way, because I think we've known what this kid can do for the last year since he's been here. And Jeremiah Love is an absolute stud. The catch that he made was really his best play. I think it went for 30, 40 yards, something like that, broke a few tackles, working his way from the left side of the field to the right side of the field. I mean, dude just has vision. He has a feel for the game, knows where he needs to get. Obviously, he scored a touchdown on the ground as well. But Aeneas Williams, I think, reminds me a lot of Kyren Williams. And this running back room is so loaded that we might not see a whole lot of him this fall. But just give him some time, because pretty soon, guys like Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love, they're going to be gone and out. And we could be talking about Aeneas Williams as, like I said, a Kyren Williams type. He just looks like that little scrappy bulldog, a little bit undersized, but what he lacks in height and just overall stature, he makes up for in really a unique build. I mean, see the size of this biceps, and I actually have a blue and gold illustrated cover on my wall. It's one of the first magazines that I was ever in when I got here 3 years ago now, and it's a Kyren Williams cover. And everyone talked about how small he was, but, you know, he's flexing in this picture that's on my wall. And you could just see, like, he makes up for it, and he's scrappy in that way. I think Aeneas Williams is the same way. You don't see a lot of guys that size break tackles, but these are the type of running backs that just work their tails off to get to a point that you say, okay, maybe I'm only 5'10", but I'm going to be strong enough in the, you know, below the waist, and I'm going to do enough bicep curls and whatever it is to be able to break that tackle. And we saw Aeneas Williams break some tackles on Saturday. And I think that might have kind of turned some heads and raised some eyebrows, because you're talking about a fan base that knows who Jeremiah Love is and knows who Jadarian Price is used to Audric Estime the last couple of seasons. But, you know, when number 20 got into the end zone on Saturday and did some good things with the rest of his opportunities, I think the fan base started thinking, okay, here we go. Maybe we have another one of these guys that just comes out here and just kind of announces himself to the Notre Dame fan base.
Speaking of Notre Dame fans, they've been waiting for these young linebackers to get out on the field. Tyler, Osbury in the slot covering Greathouse with a pass breakup, just one of the many eye-popping plays those young guys made on Saturday. They did not disappoint.
Yeah, how about I think a big part of Jaden Greathouse, last year's blue gold game darling, who had, I think, like 11 catches for 118 yards. He just went off, didn't have a catch until the third quarter. And that was primarily because he was lined up across from Jaden Osbury for most of the game, because, you know, slot corners were at a premium in this thing. Jaden Osbury played a lot of football lined up in the slot, and he was fantastic. He's a guy that I'm buying into this notion where Marcus Freeman says you just can't keep him off the field, because we saw that last spring. He just has a nose for the football, gets to it, and on that play in particular, he got to it. And I thought the rest of those linebackers, they kind of had a nose for the football too. Jalen Snead popping up all over the place. Drake Bowen knows where he needs to get to. Kingston Viliamu-Asa, how about him breaking up a play on Jaden Greathouse over the middle, where it seemed like he just kind of came out of nowhere. I was watching the game back, and it was funny. That was within the 2 or 3 minutes that he was on the broadcast, and he's kind of celebrating the throw, and he thinks it's going to be a catch, and then all of a sudden Kingston comes out of nowhere and breaks the thing up. I kind of wrote this at blueandgold.com. This may not be the most experienced Notre Dame linebacking core. That's going to be the case when you lose a guy like J.D. Bertrand and a guy like Maris Leafau, but it's talented across the board, and I think they can run 5 or 6 guys in there who, no, have not played a lot of football, but yes, have immense talent. And the only way to get that experience is to go out there and do it. And I think Max Bola, Al Golden, they have some guys that they're really confident in that can just go out there and produce right away.
A lot of positives from this game, Tyler. The one hesitation I have coming out of the game is offensive tackle. Where is your thoughts on that group heading into the summer?
Yeah, I'm just as concerned as you are, and probably just as concerned as everyone else that watched this. And there is that caveat, I think, that you just mentioned it a couple minutes ago, where the offensive line is mixed and matched and split up, and you didn't see the five across the board who had been working together for the entirety of the spring. But at some point, you just have to block the guy that's across from you. And it seemed like RJ Obe and Boubacar Traore, all of these different guys, Jordan Botello, even when he wasn't offside, they were just living in the offensive backfield, and that is not very comforting if you're trying to protect a quarterback and presumptively Riley Leonard, who's been dealing with some injury things the last, shoot, I don't know what's it been, 8 months now. If that Notre Dame game, he hasn't been 100% right. You've got to keep those guys back there upright, and that's the primary job of an offensive tackle. And too many times I saw those guys get blown right by. And it wasn't just, Tosh Baker, who's been kind of the guy that people have been honing in on. Like, okay, is he actually ready to do this? He's a year 5 guy. Can he actually start at Notre Dame? You know, Charles Jagasaw, who everyone has been so high on since he started for the first time in the Sun Bowl, he got run by. I think Sullivan Absher got, handed to him a little bit there. So I agree with you. It's one of those spots on the field where you're not totally sure what you have. But I did write at blueandgold.com today. I was pretty impressed by Emil Wagner. I think he's kind of a guy that's flying under the radar, and I mention it all the time. At this time last year, we thought we knew who the starting five were. It ended up being 2 spots completely different from what we thought, and that's when Pat Coogan and Rocco Spindler stole spots from Billy Shrout and Andrew Kristofic on the interior at guard. I would not be shocked if it's a role reversal this year. And, we think that it's Charles Jagasaw and Tosh Baker, but Emil Wagner is right there, kind of ready to take the spot from somebody. The issue is we're not quite sure that that's the case, and we're pretty sure that there's nobody else ready to do that. Like, I don't think Sullivan Absher is ready to steal a spot from everyone. So it's kind of thin at offensive tackle, Darren, and that's a concern.
Whether it's during the spring watching practice or hearing from Mike Denbrock or watching this game, did you learn anything about Mike Denbrock and this offense over the past month and a half?
Yeah, he's not going to be afraid to spread it out, and you're going to see both running backs and tight ends serving as pass catchers, just pure pass catchers. Wide receivers, wide outs, if you will. I think there were multiple empty sets in this game where there were 5 across the board. And that was – it was glaring to me when I was rewatching this game this morning. And I think it was maybe a 4th-and-2 situation, And Notre Dame did convert on a few fourth downs, which was very impressive against a defense that was very good in third and short and fourth and short situations last year. Converted, and then all of a sudden they go quickly, and on first and 10 out of a fourth and two conversion, there's five across the board, and they're throwing a little quick one to the tight end. Maybe it was Cooper Flanagan who caught, I think I want to say like a 12-yard gain or so. There's going to be a lot of that for Notre Dame. Tempo when you wouldn't expect tempo, spreading it out on first and 10 when for the longest time Notre Dame just wanted to run into a loaded box in those situations. So I think to answer your question, it's going to be different. This is the guy who orchestrated and led the number one offense in the country, who just so happened to have a Heisman Trophy winner. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Jaden Daniels didn't look like a Heisman Trophy winner at Arizona State. Mike Denbrock made him one at LSU, in the process helped make him a lot of money because he's going to hear his name here called pretty early on here in a couple nights in Detroit. So I think you have a guy like Denbrock who just knows what he's doing and makes every little piece of the offense, tight ends, running backs, wide receivers, quarterbacks, everyone is better because they're playing within a system and for a guy that knows what to do, knows how to run offensive football.
Final question for you. Fall camp, 100 days away or so. I'm wondering, at the quarterback position, which do you think will be the best, toughest competition? I'm asking between 1 and 2 or 2 and 3 or 3 and 4. Which do you think might be the most interesting and toughest challenge for one to keep another away from that particular spot?
Yeah, this question might be different in the next 5 to 7 days. We'll just have to see if someone... You know where I'm going with that.
I do.
I don't like to insinuate, but that's the reality of college football these days. Here's how I'll answer this, Darren. It really seems like that Notre Dame is still, no matter what happened this spring, is just still so set on Riley Leonard being the starter. And maybe a lot of this is truthful to Riley Leonard when he says, when he was taking these ghost reps the last two Saturdays, both in the scrimmage and the blue gold game, where he's literally mimicking or, you know, playing the play out for himself behind the line of scrimmage. They say that was for Riley Leonard, but I believe a lot of that is a push from the coaching staff said, hey, if you're healthy enough to do this, we want you to do this because we're trying to groom you to be the starter. So I'm hesitant to say that the biggest competition is between 1 and 2, because I really think if he's healthy enough to go out there on August 31st, it's going to be Riley Leonard at number one. So I've probably got to say 2 and 3, because that could change, like I said, in the next 5 to 7 days where you only have 3. But even if there is still 4 around, I'm not so certain you know for sure who number 2 is anymore. And that's not taking anything away from Steve Angeli. That's just saying, holy cow, Kenny Minchie and CJ Carr looked really, really good on Saturday. And I don't want to take anything away from Kenny Minchie. First of all, I kind of want to focus on him for a second, because I thought he did some things with his legs that Stephen Jelly probably can't do. And even CJ Carr, who's mobile and showed that he can throw on the run, I don't know if he can run like Kenny Minchie did. So 3 really good guys right there. And I think any of them could be a number 2. So when I'm answering your question, well, really, any of them could be a number 1 probably as well. But like I said, I think Riley Leonard is that for the way that Notre Dame's been setting up this year. But come fall camp, if all 4 of these guys are still around, you're going to have a lot of questions sorting out that order. Because, like I said, one of them could be a 2. And to some people, I've seen it more and more on the blueandgold.com message board. There was literally a thread asking, why did Notre Dame go get Riley Leonard if this is the way these other 3 guys look? So that's a good spot to be in if you're seeing it through that lens, because you got 4 really good guys.
All right, more Blue Gold coverage coming up this week at Blue and Gold, and I would assume NFL draft coverage also comes into play.
Oh, yeah, ton of NFL draft coverage. Definitely go to blueandgold.com even before Thursday for some of that preview type of stuff. And then we're going to be wrapping up spring ball, because – We're so blue and gold game focused right now, as we should be. Like you said at the beginning of all this, it's one of the most important off-season days for any football program's calendar. But we're going to take some time this week to also just kind of wrap up the spring in totality and go all the way back to March 7th, which feels like 3 months ago, even though it was only a month and a half ago, and just kind of absorb everything that we saw for the better month of the last, the better part of the last month and a half. So a lot of blue gold game stuff, a lot of spring football stuff, and then, like you said, NFL draft, all at blueandgold.com.
Tyler will be writing Notre Dame football stories while he's watching the Dallas Stars in the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. So good luck to your team, and really good insight tonight on a very interesting day at Notre Dame Stadium on Saturday, and look forward to talking to you again next week.
Yeah, this is the time of year that I don't get much sleep, Darren.
I know.
When the Stars are playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs, because they're always playing these Western conference teams. But hey, this is what we live for, and we got a nice, I'll plug that too, we got a nice community of hockey fans at blueandgold.com too, so sign up, get with us, and there's a whole entire 2024 NHL playoffs thread on there that's been a lot of fun already, so can't wait to follow that throughout the rest of this.
Enjoy your evening, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks. See you, Darren.
Thank you. Tyler Horka, Notre Dame football beat reporter at Blue and Gold Illustrated. Again, the website to check out his work is blueandgold.com. 56 on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. It is 7 minutes after 6 o'clock. Budweiser's weekday sports beat is live on 960 AM WSBT. Live streams at WSBTradio.com, on our free WSBT radio app, and a live video feed on the Twitch app. My name is Darren Pritchett. Hope you're having a terrific evening. We've got about 50 more minutes of Budweiser's weekday sports beat, and then we have our Cubby Corner program. That is a program dedicated to our neighbors down the road, the South Bend Cubs, who are idle tonight. South Bend dropped 5 of 6 games at Beloit last week, and now they come home with a record of 4-11, and they will take on the Quad Cities River Bandits. 6-game series starting tomorrow night. 7:05 first pitch on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. All right, let's move along to our Twitter question of the day. We'll begin with results from Friday's program. This is the question I asked you on my Twitter X account at 960 SportsBeat. Going into the Blue Gold game, which of the Blue Gold draft storylines did you find the most interesting? Here were the four choices. Number one, Kenny Minchie and CJ Carr were live. They were not going to have on red jerseys. That means they could be hit. And they were a couple of times in the ball game. Your second choice was Kingston Viliama-Asa, the exciting young linebacker. The fact that he was drafted first among the linebacking corps. Your third choice, CJ Carr playing for both the blue and the gold team offense. Your fourth choice was Jack Kaiser, Drake Bowen, and Jalen Snead, all drafted on the same team, and that could be your starting three linebackers August 31st at Texas A&M. You voted. Here are the results. Coming in fourth place, 9% of the vote went with Kaiser, Bowen, and Snead, all on the same team. Kaiser, if he was out there, I missed it. Doesn't need any time in the spring in a blue goal game. A lot of experience for Kaiser coming into his final season at Notre Dame, the veteran guy, the linebacking core, but we saw a lot of Bowen and Snead, and they did some good things in the ball game, so they got 9% of the vote. Third place in the voting, getting 19% of the tallies, CJ Carr playing on both sides of the football. Tyler Horkin made a really good point a couple of years ago. Drew Pine played on both sides of the football. It did not go well. It was a rough afternoon at Notre Dame Stadium for Pine, who is going to suit up as a Missouri Tiger this fall. The fact that Carr played for both sides did just fine. For the gold team, 8 of 13 for 99 yards and a touchdown. For the blue team, Carr was 7 of 10 for 66 yards altogether, 15 of 23 for 165 yards, a touchdown, no interceptions, and he was sacked 3 times. Second place in the voting. Your most interesting blue-gold draft storyline. Second place with 33% of the vote went to Kingston Valiama-Asa, the linebacker. Very exciting. Coming out of the West Coast. Was drafted first among the linebacking corps, which surprised all of us. There's a lot of good linebackers to choose from. So 33% said, that was a pretty interesting storyline. And I would agree with that. But winning the vote, 39% who voted, the most interesting storyline coming out of the blue gold game draft was that Minshew and Carr would be live in this contest. And they had to scramble around. Carr was sacked 3 times, Minshew 1 time. Great opportunity for them to play in a game-like situation, knowing that they could be hit, and they were popped a couple of times by the defense. Jason Onye, I think, stole the show with his one hand and then two-handed push of Steve Angeli, who went down like a tall pine a couple of times being sacked in a red jersey. But Minshew and Carr live won the vote at 39%. We thank you for voting, and we've got a brand new question up this afternoon that you can vote on right now on Twitter X at 960 SportsBeat. The question is this. How would you best describe Notre Dame freshman quarterback C.J. Carr's blue gold game performance? You can choose from one of these four. Better than expected. What I expected. Solid or okay. What best describes the way you look at C.J. Carr's performance in the blue gold game? Better than expected. What I expected. Solid or okay. Again, check us out. Our Twitter X account is 960 SportsBeat. Results on tomorrow's program. Brand new question coming up on tomorrow's Budweiser's Weekday SportsBeat. And we thank you in advance for voting. 14 minutes after 6 o'clock here on Budweiser's Weekday SportsBeat. Coming up in a moment, the My 5 question of the day, the top 5 storylines of the Blue Goal weekend. That's on the way next on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, being brought to you by our title sponsor, Budweiser, and Ghost Energy. It's the feel-good energy drink we've all been waiting for, featuring Sour Patch Kids-inspired flavors. By First State Bank, committed to being a premier financial partner, First State Bank demonstrates and delivers hometown values. By Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger, now with 3 locations serving Michiana's most favorite pizza since 1978. And we're also brought to you by Bethel University Athletics. Signups for youth summer sports camps are underway. Visit bupilots.com for details. Well, the blue gold game is in the books for 2024. 15 spring practices have come and gone. Now we have to wait 131 days until the Irish run out onto the field in front of the 12th man in College Station, Texas, getting set to take on the Texas A&M Aggies. We never want the summer to fly by. We want to enjoy the nice weather. But I think all the football fans in us are ready to see that college football season show up on the calendar, and let's see what happens across college football going from a four-team to a 12-team playoff, and the possibility that Notre Dame could host a college football playoff game, since they cannot be one of the top four seeds, since they will not be a conference champion due to independence. They could be the number five seed, six, seven, or eight. Those teams will host a college football playoff game in their building. And that, I would assume, is a major goal for this Fighting Irish football team. Bring someone from the South up here to Notre Dame Stadium. Sorry, sneezing attack. All right, so let's go through some things that stood out in the Blue Gold game with our My 5 question of the day.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Okay, today let's just go through some positional storylines from Saturday's scrimmage heard right here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is number five.
Number five, a good day for the Fighting Irish defensive line. I joked a moment ago about Jason Onye's one-hand and two-hand touch tackles slash sacks of quarterback Steve Angeli, where he kind of tumbled over to the ground. Good day for Jason Onye, battling to be a backup defensive lineman and a key guy in the rotation in 2024. RJ Oben, the newcomer from Duke, had a couple of tackles in the ball game. He's going to be more than likely a starter for this football team. I thought that Josh Burnham showed up in this particular game. Not a surprise, a guy that can play either defensive end spot, as we learned during bowl preparation last December. We didn't see, of course, much of Howard Cross, Riley Mills. I know I called Cross's name on one play. Guys that don't need to be in the football game, they're going to be ready to roll for Texas A&M. So the defensive line taking on those makeshift offensive lines should have had the advantage, and I thought that they did in this particular contest. So all around a good day for the Fighting Irish defensive line, even though a lot of points were scored, but just like everything else, the defense was broken up.
Four!
Coming in at number four, I like what I saw from the tight end position. Now, Mike Denbrock, our new offensive coordinator, told us in one of his first press conferences that you might see a little less 12 and 13 personnel from his offense. He would like to run the football by spreading the field, and we saw a lot of four wide receiver sets, even five wide receiver sets, empty backfields from Mike Denbrock. But the tight ends were still involved in this game. Cooper Flanagan had a touchdown catch as a freshman. He was targeted seven times in the Blue Gold game, playing for the gold team, and came up with three catches for 34 yards. You had Jack Larson, a freshman, targeted five times as a member of the blue team. Had a really good day, had a nice crossing pattern catch in the ball game. As soon as I said crossing pattern on the broadcast, I got a couple of tweets. What a crossing pattern by a Notre Dame offense? Yeah, you're going to see that. Larson, four catches for 41, a long of 21. But I thought Eli Raritan shined in this game. Got off to a slow start in the spring as the Irish tried to continue to get him healthy. And I thought he was a really, really good player in this game. There was a pass along the sideline. I think Carr was the one that threw it. Threw kind of a bullet. And I think this is the one that Tyler Horka from Blue and Gold was mentioning in the first hour. Scrambling to the sideline, Carr got near the boundary and fired a pass right down the line. And with his feet inbounds, it looked like either Raritan couldn't handle it or someone might have got a fingertip on it. Otherwise, Raritan, quite effective in the game, had a very nice juggling catch for a touchdown for the first score of the game. at about the 5-yard line. The ball, not sure if it was tipped or not, but he got his hands on it, ball up in the air, grabbed it, ran forward, got into the end zone for a touchdown. So despite the fact 12 and 13 personnel may not be as cool as it used to be around these parts, Reardon, Flanagan, and Larson heavily involved in the passing game on Saturday. That's pretty good production knowing that Mitchell Evans and Kevin Bauman are still coming back from knee surgeries, not playing in the blue goal game.
Okay. Number three.
I asked this of Tyler Horkin in the first hour, and I kind of put these two guys together. Micah Gilbert and Deion Colsey both took advantage of the opportunities given to them on Saturday. I bring up Colsey because it's easy to forget about the veteran wide receiver with the wide receivers brought into the program from the transfer portal and freshman receivers coming into the program. Colsey dinged up last year, not a major factor on offense. It feels like, if not now, when for Deion Colsey with the good amount of talent brought into this roster and this wide receiver room. And I thought he showed up, and he had a tough challenge. Colsey and Christian Gray, I thought, put on a great display. Again, I have to watch the football doing the play-by-play, but Gray and Colsey were hooked up, and it was good entertainment throughout the afternoon. Colsey ended up with 7 targets, 4 catches, 58 yards. Good showing for Colsey. Don't forget about me, the veteran wide receiver on this team. And then you had Micah Gilbert, the North Carolina freshman, who my guests on the program over the last couple of months have praised Gilbert as a guy that always showed up in spring practice when the media was watching. And apparently, that's not the only time it was happening. It was happening consistently throughout spring practice. I know Eric Hansen felt like he was a more ready-to-go wide receiver than the other freshmen, and that's not to take away the talents of the other guys. Just at this stage, he was more ready to go, and after dropping the first ball thrown to him, Gilbert, 9 targets, 5 catches, 79 yards, a couple of scores, the seam route perfectly thrown by C.J. Carr for a touchdown. So two guys, different parts of their Notre Dame careers, opportunities to shine, took advantage of those opportunities. And it was good to see K.K. Smith, 6 targets, 3 for 54. And late in the ball game, we got a little dose of Chris Mitchell, the transfer from Florida International. Stop and go, walk on corner, falls down. Angeli finds Mitchell, and he goes the distance for a 62-yard game-winning touchdown. Mitchell targeted 2 times, 2 catches for 69 yards, and the game-winning touchdown. Now, eventually, we're going to add in Jaden Thomas, who is out with a hamstring. Cam Williams, the freshman, out with a hamstring. Saldate, he'll be arriving on campus. Bo Collins will put on the Notre Dame helmet. In fall, the transfer from Clemson. You know, we heard there could be 5-6 receivers playing for this football team. It's going to be really interesting to see who doesn't make the cut. There's going to be some guys that can help you that are going to be outside of that group and probably watching more than they would like on the sideline in 2024. But you want competition. That's why I love this roster. You look at so many places, there is really good competitions taking place. So the wide receiving core comes in at number 3.
Number 2.
All right, number 2, let's go with the linebacking core because they showed their abilities during the blue goal game. You look at Kingston, Viliama Asa, and Drake Bowen, the young guys looking to fill the shoes of J.D. Bertrand. KVA and Bowen, very active, physical in this game. KVA going sideline to sideline, 4 tackles in the ball game. Bowen had 7 tackles for the blue team, and also had 3 assists for 7 tackles in the contest. He also had a quarterback hurry in the ball game. I thought Jalen Snead showed off his speed in the ball game, 7 tackles for Jalen Snead with a pass breakup. I loved when Jaden Osbury was in the slot covering Jaden Greathouse stride for stride with the speedy wide receiver and came up with a pass breakup in that particular sequence. And Osbury, very versatile linebacker, had three tackles on the afternoon. Keanu Hukia, 12 tackles, couple of tackles for loss. We called his name a boatload in the game. He was all over the place, number 43 for the gold team. So really good showing by the linebacking core. No more Leofau, no more Bertrand. Kaiser was on the sideline watching this game, but a lot of young guys got experience, and I think they did some really, really good things. Very exciting to see this linebacking core, and you're probably going to see a handful of guys playing again based on down and distance. A lot of different parts with different traits for Al Golden to shape and use with this 2024 defense. Here's Marcus Freeman, his commentary on the play of the linebackers.
I don't know if anything today as much as the progression of the spring. Like, Kingston's gonna, he's gonna be a really good football player for Notre Dame football. And you thought that when he came in. Yeah, I mean, you thought that in high school recruiting and then when he came in, but he validated that through 15 practices. He's gonna be a really good football player and do some great things for us right away. Drake has really done a good job in filling the void for, you know, JD and you know, that leadership that we lost in production. And Snead and Jaden Osbury are, you know, two super athletic players that I think are for Jalen being in his third year, really starting to come into his own, you know, understanding what he's doing and so he's playing faster. I mean, he brings a really unique skill set. And Osbury would be able to say, okay, he's helping us at linebacker, but we got to find ways to not take him off the field. So we moved him to nickel halfway through spring. And so that's a reflection of his athleticism, his versatility. So it's a great room, you know, really confident in where we're at now. And again, only guy you plan on losing is Kaiser.
Marcus Freeman on that linebacking core. And now we move to
number one.
All right, the number one storyline from the blue gold game, in my opinion, was the play of the quarterbacks. With Riley Leonard behind everyone, going through the motions of every play, Steve Angeli, Kenny Minchie, CJ Carr on display. Angeli, 17 of 25 for 228, a couple of touchdown passes, sacked three times in the red jersey. Kenny Minchie, slow start, got better as the day went on, 12 of 19 for 123, a TD, a pick, and sacked one time. And Carr playing for both teams, CJ, 15 of 23 for 165, a touchdown, no interceptions, and he was sacked three times. Steve Angeli again, solid. What I expected to see from him. A guy that you feel confident that can run this offense, make the throws. I thought a couple of throws were off. I called it, there was one or two throws that felt like change-ups. So it was a good solid day for Angeli. I don't think we really learned anything about him. We have a good feel for who the New Jersey native is. Kenny Minchie, a little off at first, maybe nerves, maybe jitters. Got better, really good touchdown throw. I loved his ability to run the football, as we documented earlier in the program. Minchie carried the ball six times for 40 yards. He had a touchdown run. The other five carries all went for first downs. He averaged 6.7 yards per carry. And Carr was just terrific, full control of the offense. From my vantage point, making good decisions, on-time throws, accurate. And the two highlight throws, the touchdown pass to Gilbert, and the throw from the left hash into the wind across the field to the opposite sideline and dropped it into the bucket for Gilbert to catch. Great day for everybody. Solid by Minchie. Angeli, kind of who you expect him to be. Carr, a little further along than maybe I even anticipated. All right, 6:34 is our time. Those are my top five storylines position-wise from the Blue Goal game. We'll take a timeout. More conversation on the way on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Abby, thank you as always for the forecast update. Sports Beat on this Monday evening being brought to you by Budweiser and Ghost Energy, by First State Bank, Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger, and Bethel University Athletics. My name is Darren Pritchett. We've got two more segments to go for Sports Beat for tonight. Cubby Quarter, an inside look of South Bend Cubs baseball, comes your way at the top of the hour here on WSBT Radio. How about the Irish baseball team? They lost 10 straight ACC games. They come out and sweep Boston College at X Stadium over the weekend, including yesterday throwing the program's first no-hitter since they gave up no hits against the Ball State Cardinals back in 1988. So the Irish are 5-16 now in the ACC. And hopefully they can grab some momentum after a really good weekend against Boston College. They will take on Central Michigan at X Stadium in a non-conference game tomorrow night. For the Chicago Cubs, losing 2 out of 3 to the Miami Marlins is obviously a big surprise. The Marlins, one of the worst teams in the National League. Good news, though. Cubs ace Justin Steele, his throwing program coming off a hamstring injury, went very, very well. Sounds like he will throw 3 innings down in Arizona at their spring training facility this week, and he's on the fast track to get back to this Cubs rotation that has a major hole right now with Kyle Hendricks, the veteran, really struggling throughout the month of April. Does not look like himself at all, as he has been hit very, very hard so far this season. With Jameson Taillon back, you would have to imagine that Hendricks might be the odd man out of the rotation when Justin Steele returns. Honestly, I was hoping and thinking that Steele might make a rehab assignment in South Bend sometime this week. South Bend is home Tuesday through Sunday. But at the very least, he's going to pitch in that rehab, I guess, simulation-type game down in Arizona. Who knows, maybe this weekend? Fingers crossed he might show up in South Bend. I honestly don't know if the Iowa Cubs, the AAA affiliate of the Chicago Cubs, is home this week. But anytime a Cub player is out and needs a rehab assignment, South Bend always in play with the great facilities we have here, plus it's just about, an hour and a half or so from Wrigley Field. I've not driven it, sorry. Hour and a half, 2 hours. You Cub fans know how far it is. So we might see Justin Steele, fingers crossed, this weekend with South Bend. If not, we'll see him back at Wrigley Field very, very soon. Do I need to mention the White Sox who are 3-18? Probably not. They are who they are. I looked at their lineup and who they're going to play tonight, the batting averages. I know averages are kind of a non-cool thing in the way of describing or analyzing a player, but holy Toledo, everybody's under 200 except one guy. It is just unthinkable right now on the south side of Chicago. They'll take on the Twins coming up tonight, and the Tigers and Rays played down in Tampa tonight at 6:50. Tarik Skubal, boy, he is so good for the Tigers, a 2.28 ERA. He will pitch for Detroit against Tampa coming up tonight. And also kind of an interesting note today, Purdue Boilermaker Mason Gillis, man, that corner three was his shot for Matt Painter's team, helping Purdue to get to the national championship game. He went into the transfer portal recently, and he is going to play for the Duke Blue Devils next year. That will be a very odd sight. All right, 6:45 is our time. We've got our Sizzler segment. We'll talk some sports wagering coming up next on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Hey everyone, Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.